You are listening to 88.9 FM, KXLU Los Angeles. Here in the studio today, we have Tony Macklin, actually, not in the studio, but over in, is it North Carolina?
It's suburb of North Carolina called Las Vegas.
Fantastic. And Tony Macklin, he runs this.
It's Nevada.
Okay. Oh, great. TonyMacklin.net. It's a wonderful site of film reviews and also film interviews from the old days, before the whole film interview thing became part of marketing a film. Tony went out in the 1970s, and for a magazine called Film Heritage, he went and interviewed all the great filmmakers, Sam Peckinpah, Howard Hawks, Alfred Hitchcock, and he went out with his tape recorder. And you can hear these recordings. He's made them available on his website, TonyMacklin.net, TonyMacklin. Tony, tell us a little bit about that experience and why you did that back in the 70s.
Well, in the 70s, film was just beginning to become recognized as an art form. And I was teaching at the University of Dayton, and I was a critic for the Dayton newspaper. And I did my master's thesis on James Agee, who kind of brought my world together because I loved literature and I loved film, and he was a writer and maybe the grandfather of all film criticism. And it just happened. A guy from Universal called me and set up the first interview. It went very well, and I got kind of a reputation. And it kind of escalated, and it wasn't easy because sometimes I would have to wait, like I have just waited 25 years to get Clint Eastwood, and I waited for a long time to get John Wayne. But I was very fortunate, and I'm not sure that I could do it today, that there's so much celebrity and so much crowding, and it's very difficult. But at that time, I wasn't a lone wolf, but I was kind of in a minority, and it was my territory.
Yeah, well, it was your territory because you got them to open up and talk to you. And what I love about the film interviews is that they're very raw and they're very real. These are not overproduced interviews. You hear when you're interviewing Alfred Hitchcock, you hear like construction in the background. They're like doing something to his house. When you hear Leah Brackett, you talk about getting lemonade from her.
She actually ruined lemonade for the rest of my life. It's the sweetest. She set an NCAA record for the sweetest lemonade ever made, the most sugar in lemonade. So, yes, she made me lemonade. So many of these interviews, I was lucky because I had, I guess, a technique or a strategy. One, I really tried to listen. And the second thing was I really prepared myself. And they would tell me, like Hitchcock, the guy who sat in with us, said, he gave you some answers he has never given to anybody else. And after I spent 3 hours with the Duke in John Wayne's house, I got a signed picture from him, and he said, Tony, you caught me in penance as no one else ever has. Thanks, Duke. And that was great. But what happens so often is that people would come to interview Duke Wayne and say, do you ever fight in bars? And he'd say, no, I never do that. Do you ever fight in bars? No. Do you ever fight? No, come on. Do you ever fight in bars? Well, one time, and then the next day the headline would be, John Wayne fights in bars. So when I said to him, that last scene in Searchers, when you struck the pose like Harry Carey does, that was great. And he said, you picked that up, you caught that. So we really had these conversations, and I was very comfortable with these people, because one thing you realize about the great actors is that they're human beings, and they have a lot of depth and a lot of character. Of all the people I interviewed, I think I liked almost all of them. There were a couple that it didn't hit off, but most we were on the same wavelength, and I listened, and what I would do is I would follow up when they would say something. Instead of, like Charlie Rose on TV, he goes right back to his notes, and he never takes advantage of an opportunity. But when they said something, I would follow up, and Edith Head, for instance, said, you won't stop. You keep probing. You won't stop. And yet she appreciated that.
Yeah, your interview with her was wonderful. She just talked about the way she designed the costumes for her films and the color palettes she used. And what was interesting, we get these DVDs now where they have little EPKs or little special features of the costumes in the movies, in the specific film, or the score. But what you did in your interview, you gave us kind of a moment and an experience. You captured it all her skills.
Well, I was a novice. She made me stand on a platform, and at that time I was wearing a tie-dyed outfit, and she said, you look like a layer cake. And so I was an expert, but I also was really wanted to learn from these people, and they were great teachers.
Well, tell us a little bit about Sam Peckinpah, because we're going to play maybe about a 20-second clip of him being angry at you. And tell us what happened.
No, he wasn't. That was Sam. Now, I waited the longest I've ever waited. I had my young son, and we waited in the car, I think in the parking lot, for more than 3 hours. He lived in the old, where Marilyn Monroe used to live, the trailer that she used to have on the, I think it was the MGM lot. And I went in, and it was only the only time I think I was intimidated. It passed after a while, but I was intimidated, and I asked him, "What do you?" A basic question, and you said to me on the phone earlier, "Well, I can't tell you what he said to me because it would have to be bleep 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 bleep."
That's exactly what it was. We're going to play the end of that for our audience here. They'll enjoy it. Hold on 1 second. As we get into the archives for an interview Tony did with Sam Peckinpah back in the 70s.
Why don't I? I get paid to do a picture, and I try to steal enough and try to rewrite and lie and cheat and get it on the way I think is okay. But no, why don't you?
I don't argue.
Nobody puts money. I don't have any money. They pay me. I'm a hired hand.
The guy who made Cable Hogan Junior Bonner is a hired hand.
He's a hired hand. Sam Peckinpah, the director of Pat Garrett and Billy the Kid, The Ballad of Cable Hogue, of course. Wild Bunch.
Did you clean it up or the thing that he had a pose. I mean, he had an image that he kept. And we started talking about our sons playing soccer. And that's how I got to him. That his, when he started talking personally about his son, I'm not even sure it's on the interview, because at one time I didn't think it was relevant. I do now, because it's personal and it's human. But it was an experience for me, and you almost had to laugh. I mean, he is a piece of work. He was a pistol. He was the Colt 45 drawn, cocked, and ready to blow.
Yeah, and you also talked to, you went out of your way to talk to screenwriters like Leia Brackett, who wrote with William Faulkner. She wrote The Big Sleep, right? And she lived in Ohio at the time. She had left the Hollywood business for the most part until she wrote the granddaddy sequel of them all. But what was it like going into their homes? Because it seems
she lived with her husband in rural, it was a hot summer day in rural Ohio. And my daughter and I, my little daughter, see, I often took my kids with me because I figured they wouldn't attack me too much if there was a child somewhere in the vicinity. But she was a wonderful woman, and that probably of all the interviews, I mean, I certainly had some people that had more fame, Wayne and Hitchcock and Charlton Heston and
Altman,
Bob Altman, but there is a strong, even today, many many years after her death, there's a strong fan group, fan base. I was also telling you previously at one time that I got a couple of responses to the interview from Scotland. No, I don't know anybody in Scotland, and I don't know how they got to my website, but they did, and they were exhilarated by hearing this woman whose work they loved and whose work they admired, and they were great fans of hers. And so it was really neat for me to be able to share that and realize that her voice still speaks to us.
You're listening to Center Stage with Mike Hoagie here on KXLU 88.9 FM Los Angeles. We're on the phone with Tony Macklin of TonyMacklin.net, just a wonderful resource of old interviews with the famous Hollywood filmmakers, from screenwriters
Michael,
to directors.
Mike, can I correct you?
You may very...
Old. Let's not use the word old.
I should say classic, right? Classic. Classic.
Thank you very much.
Well, yeah. You know, and you also have this book out there, The Film Heritage Interviews, where you collect all your... You transcribe the taped interviews and you collect them in a book. And it's a wonderful resource for up-and-coming film students and people who just generally love cinema.
Thank you.
Yeah, and you also... your recent reviews, you do a great job reviewing movies for your website and for some newspapers. I loved some of your recent reviews on Inception, how you called it, this is a film that people like who don't dream at all, you know, or don't dream very much. And I felt the same way. You know, it's just so well-crafted and well-made, and yet it was so logical also that you felt that, is that what dreaming is? Is it just a reason and...
Right. It wasn't that I didn't respect it. It was just that for me, here's a film about turning reality on it, cockeyed, and it could find the secret of life, and basically what it is he wants to see the faces of his children. Well, that's nice, but that isn't the great, vast, cosmic dream that we might expect from that picture. I also quoted that it was like, to me, like remember the Christmas Story, the film where Ralphie is waiting for the message. He's waiting for his Red Rider, a BB gun, and he's waiting for this message from a sponsor, and it comes to him. He's been, and he's so nervous and so excited and so anxious about it, and he opens it, and the message is, drink your Ovaltine. And I thought the film was kind of like that the message of Inception is drink your Ovaltine.
Yeah, well, that's well done. What do you think of the current Hollywood cinema compared to the films that you saw and inspired you to interview all the filmmakers back in the day?
Well, it's a different time, and of course, I think many of us think that the 70s were the most personal age and therefore very, very creative in American film history. But I'm not one of those who dismisses films today. Granted, I haven't seen a whole lot of American films this year that I would put on the best 10 list. Probably my top two films so far this year are the Stieg Larsson Millennium film, The Girl with a Dragon Tattoo, and also a film that I think would, if it were an American film, it would be a monstrous hit, called The Prophet. And if you haven't seen it, or if your listeners haven't seen it, I really recommend that you see A Prophet. It's a foreign film, and it's part prison film and part gangster saga, almost like it's related to the Godfather. Today, one of my favorite actors, and he was in the Inception. If I wanted to try to, in fact, maybe someday I will be able to interview him, is Joseph Gordon-Levitt. I love that young man, and I hope he gets an Oscar, and I think he should. He was in one of the films that a compelling performance. I don't know whether you ever saw it, called Mysterious Skin.
We actually had Greg Araki came up here to talk about it.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, then you know, and that film was, I mean, I thought it was the best film of the year.
I think it was 2005, I think, right?
Yes, it was. And then he made a film called The Lookout, which was also very good with Daniels. But, you know, 500 Days of Summer Coyness and a kind of secondary role in Inception, he hasn't really found the what he can sink his teeth into modern in contemporary cinema. So I really have great feelings, great hopes for him. And I think the American film industry, the problem is that it's so much effects, and you and I who love writing, who love good writing, it's very, very hard to find a script that's at all good. So the better writing is probably done for TV.
Yeah, well, right now we are definitely living in that age of television and the intersection of all the good drama is on the television. I think, you know, because you can't make an adult drama anymore. Almost
one of the great things that we had here in Vegas is that they're showing Spooks, which is MI5, and it's a British spy series, and it is phenomenal. I mean, it was on BBC TV, and I sound like an Anglophile or foreign film, and I'm not. But that we just watched it Saturday night, and it's so stunning, and yet it has twists, but they all are credible. And when you have twists in films today, in American films today, there's so much contrivance going on and so much special effects. I know I sound like I'm putting down modern film. I don't want to be, but when you compare it to the possibility of film, if it's not vampire taking a ride on a rocket ship, it's probably not going to be made.
Yeah, well, I'm going to tell you what I just read in the trades the other day was that Spooks was just bought and it's going to be turned into an American series now. And they don't know if they're going to keep it MI5 or if they're going to go to do CIA. You know, they haven't decided yet what to do with it. But
they probably should do CIA.
Yeah.
They really should if they're going to make it an American thing. But the question is, who's going to make it? And how effective? I mean, we have seen the last couple of years, the Mel Gibson film, I forget the name of it, but it was based on a British film TV series.
Edge of Darkness. Edge of Darkness.
Yes, yes. But the British series was so much better. The film was good, but the British series was so much better. And then there was another one about a newspaper. Oh, I forget what. I should be able to remember. But there was another one that they made into an American film recently with Russell Crowe. State of Play.
Well, it was an excellent film. Excellent film.
Yeah. But if you see the seven-part TV series, that will blow you away. That's even better.
Well, it's, you know, British drama versus American film, you know. What can we do, I guess. Well, Tony, thank you so much for joining us on the show. We have to have you back here because you're not only have such a fantastic archive of film interviews, you're one of the great reviewers right now of film.
Well, I appreciate that. And let me leave you with this. For people who think I'm an Anglophile, one of my favorite actors was Hunts Hall. I only got to talk to him on the telephone, but Hunts Hall of the Bowery Boys was one of my favorite actors, so I am a real American.
Well, that's wonderful. Yeah, is that in the archive there yet, or?
Oh, no. I was on the set of Earthquake with Gabriel Dell, and I told him how much I liked Hunts and Satch, and he called him on the phone. We talked on the phone. It was just a chance to say, it's one of those moments that you don't have captured except in your mind. Another one is standing on the set at Earthquake, standing next to Ava Gardner, and she turned me to stone.
Wow. Wow.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you so much. We were talking to Tony Macklin of TonyMacklin.net, not .com, but .net. You can check out all his interviews. There's a link to buy his book, The Film Heritage Interviews. Thank you again, Tony, and hopefully we'll have you on again soon.
Appreciate it.